I was playing Horizon Zero Dawn this morning.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Robot machines. Robot animals.
It's single player?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have it online?
I don't know. It's pretty cool, though.
You're all about the single player game?
Yeah, I am. You know, these days, it's like enough to be able to sit down for 30 minutes and get through something. That the idea of, like, in high school, I played Warcraft 3 online, which is like StarCraft. It's like real-time strategy game. And it was awesome, but it took a lot of time to play. You have to, like, get good for a game to be fun. Although it was fun to be able to play like a 20-minute one-on-one game. But if you weren't good, it was just frustrating. Maybe I should play Rocket League. Apparently you can play cross-platform now in Rocket League.
Yeah. Does that mean if you're on the PlayStation, you'll be playing against people on the computer?
Maybe.
Because that's a good way to lose.
I was playing this morning, though, because I woke up at 5. And I couldn't go back to sleep. So I upgraded Mirage, wasted some time on Twitter, and then played Horizon Zero Dawn. And here I am, recording a podcast. That's a day in the life. And it's only 11 a.m.
When you upgrade Mirage, did you use the same strategy as how you upgrade Ember Map?
I did. I'm actually going to make a video soon. It's going to be like a free video. And it's just going to go through that. It's just going to be high level. It's not going to actually do an upgrade. But it's going to talk about the steps and then show them, and I'll just show like how I use Yarn Interactive. But there's basically, yeah, it was literally the same steps as we talked about in that old podcast episode, and it worked out so well, and it's awesome because that's the kind of thing. Someone had an upgrade Ember CLI PR open on Mirage for like the last 8 months, mm-hmm. and it was red. It was like not test weren't passing, and I just always ignored it, or like I would ping him and say, can you fix something? And it's like some weird error. It's always some weird error and you don't have no idea why, because you look at the diff and there's like 10 dependencies whose versions are changing and you're getting some error that's not related to the logic of your add-on. So where do we even start with that? And that's always how it was before. And it was just like, I just ignored it. But I use the same pattern that we talked about where you first upgrade like forwards compatible dependencies in one go. So you get like 8 of them knocked out in one go and it's green. And then you just go one by one. And it seems, again, the first time you do it, it seems like it's nice when it works out, when I just type like Ember CLI update and everything just works. But this is so much better. And you just don't get those cryptic errors because add-ons are so good at being backwards compatible. And then you run the Ember upgrade command and then work through the failures there. But there's just a few. And it was awesome. I mean, I was doing it. I did half of it while I was watching The Bachelor with my girlfriend. And then I did the other half like this morning. And it took like 25 minutes, you know?
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Did I watch The Bachelor?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I don't really like Colton that much, I'm going to say. I don't think he makes a good Bachelor.
I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Oh, you will. By the end of the season, you will. The Bachelor podcast brought to you by Sam and Ryan.
I actually think there are Bachelor podcasts.
There's a Talking Dead podcast about The Walking Dead.
Just podcast about everything now.
Yeah, I should just, my entire day should just consist of 1 hour segments where I'm on a different podcast talking about some different aspect of my life. And if I can get paid for that, then it would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Although I guess if you just spend all your time talking about the things and then you no longer have time to like play video games or watch The Bachelor.
That's why you have a podcast about podcasting. Yeah, exactly. About podcasting.
So just this last hour I was on a podcast. Let me tell you what we talked about. The Meta Work podcast company. That host podcast talking about podcasts. Okay, we're going to wrap this.
There's that podcast definitely exists, by the way.
Podcast about podcast. Yeah,
and we should probably be listening to it. I guess before we start, I wanted to do just like some housekeeping stuff. I have a couple notes. One of them last week I mentioned.
What a buzzkill.
Me buzzkilling? Because we can't talk about podcasts about podcasts.
Yeah, you're bringing out the brooms here.
Yeah. No, come on. Housekeeping's supposed to be exciting. This is like all the stuff we get going. Actually, the first thing's boring. It's a correction. But last week I mentioned that Rails API was no longer a thing. It's very, very much still a thing.
Oh.
I don't know where that idea came from.
Hmm.
But yes, correction.
You just had an image of like DHH screaming on stage, yes. That no one should be making JSON APIs in your head. And you were like, yeah, they removed the API completely from Rails.
yeah. Okay, now good now, to know. Now on to the exciting stuff. We're doing two trainings at EmberConf.
Mm-hmm.
We have one on storefront and Ember data, declarative data fetching, basically everything we've been talking about for the last year.
Yeah, what about what we talked about yesterday?
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking about. I was we got in a huge argument about not argument.
Us? But just, argument?
No. But about how what sort of declarative APIs should be in storefront, how they should match up with Ember data. And then like this morning, I was like, man, the fact that we're like getting into it about this stuff, this training is going to be awesome.
Yes.
Like this is going to be like, that's a good sign of a training.
Natural excitement.
If it's going on during the training, the instructors are arguing, not really a good thing, but you know, if it's a few months before, it's a good sign. So
natural excitement. Yeah. As opposed to the natural boredom, which usually, you know, is the evidence in our other conversations. So,
And then the next training is going to be also at EmberConf, animations.
Yes.
And so we're going to look at Liquid Fire, Ember Animated, and just talk about how to bring these into your app. So yeah, that one's going to be good too.
Yep. Because you know all about animations. You've been making animated Ember apps for years.
Yeah.
We're going to have some awesome animations on embermap.com by the time we get to the training. And that's going to be fun, motivating examples.
Yeah, I think the thing that I want to teach in this training is like animations are always really hard to do and they always get overlooked and you don't end up doing them. And so, but they're not easy, but there is a path there in Ember to get animations into your app. So you take this training and you can go home and you can start animating things.
Yep. You know, I am wrapping up the nested dropdown series on Ember Map. And that
is a great segue into my third housekeeping note,
which is what have we been doing on the site?
Yes.
Nested drop down. So I've recorded this epic video and decided to split it up because it was an epic video. Learned a lot about angle bracket syntax and how the compiler resolves component lookups, and found an interesting like error that's kind of a bug, but not really, but is kind of a strange thing. I guess it actually is a bug. I was talking with Robert about it, but this was all about during my wrapping up of the series. And one of the points of the series is, you know, it's like one of our, it's probably our most advanced series yet. It's not the kind of thing a beginner or even intermediate person should really spend their time deeply on. I mean, maybe an intermediate person, because it's just very abstract. And it's almost like the building blocks for an add-on. Like if you were going to make a truly generic reusable drop-down as a public add-on, we end up with this super flexible primitive that can be used in like any situation.
Yeah. And I think it's the series, like if you ever thought like, oh, I can't be clever in Ember, I'm too boxed in. I think this series, if you want to see like real Ember creativity from an expert, this is a good series for that.
Yep. It's really cool. And so the video that I'm on now is all about, created this flexible primitive, but it's not actually that enjoyable to use. Like we look at our application template that uses this thing and it's like, this is a mess. Why did we just take six videos? I just heard you drawl on for an hour and a half to end up with this horrible template that's like the opposite of what you would want. You know, Bootstrap is easy to use. Why is Bootstrap popular? It's easy to use. Like I need a drop down thing. I just do blah, 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 and it's there. So the whole point of these last few videos in the series is that is what you want. You want to just be able to do a nav menu with a sub item and a sub menu that has sub items, and that's all you want to see. So how can you wrap flexible low level primitives in higher level domain specific components that are inflexible deliberately so that it's easy for developers who are building the app to use them consistently and use them correctly. So this principle, this idea applies to a lot of what we do, and it's definitely going to show up in the animations training, because the whole point, what you just said, why do animations get overlooked? If they were as easy as adding a drop-down menu from Bootstrap, everyone would be using them. And things like Liquid If are very easy because they're high level, but a lot of the things of Liquid Fire are lower level, and Ember Animated has all like low level, lots of low level things as well. So the trick is going to be for example, if we're going to do something in Ember Map and we want to transition from a page that has lots of thumbnails of videos to a page that has a single one and do some animation that matches that thing, well, that's going to show up time and time again. So how can we wrap that in a declarative way, in a consistent way, a high-level way that's specific to our domain and makes it actually pleasant and likely that other developers will use these things?
Nice. I really like that insight of having something that under the hood is flexible, but then when you're using it in the application, it's inflexible.
Right. I've thought about this too. I was just having done this, made me think about this because, you know, some of the teams we've helped and some of the apps we worked on when we were earlier in Ember, there's always this, sometimes you just work with the low level stuff and you don't take the time to make the higher level things. And so maybe you bring in a third party add-on, Power Select, and you have Power Selects all over your app. And some people will just stay like that. But there's a couple problems with this. It's like different levels of abstraction. Like you have domain specific components and then you have the building blocks like Power Select. You're also probably customizing Power Select in several ways. And so you're probably passing a lot of arguments or modal dialogue, same thing. And if you want to change how it works in one of these areas, you have to change it everywhere. So what we always do in our apps is make these higher level things. It's just become part of how we build apps. So we'll make a UI modal that under the hood, it uses modal dialogue as its implementation, or acme-select, which uses Power Select, and all those options are basically like pre-wired in that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this strategy definitely makes things consistent. So you change one place, it updates everywhere, and then it's easier to refactor and it's easier to upgrade. Having just gone through this with a app that has a whole bunch of forms where everything is wrapped in its own component.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know you get one thing working, it works everywhere.
Right. And then of course there's always that tension between, you know, you don't want to lock you yourself or other people into bad abstractions. And so that's the tension here, but there's good ways to think about that and to approach that. So yeah, that's going to be a big part of the animations training for sure.
Nice.
So I'm excited. Ember Animated is awesome, and excited to talk more about it before we get to that training too, so we can get all the tips and tricks there. So that'll be good.
All the insider info.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had a fast boot bug on our website that's I think it can come up in a lot of fast boot situations, and there's a whole bunch of layers involved here. So I figured it'd be interesting to get into and talk about. So the particular bug was we launched a new podcast page that looks amazing, and it's fast booted. And when you loaded the fast boot page, it would load some of the cards. Every podcast is in a card. It would load some of the cards and they would be unstyled. They would have, they would have a title and then some like description underneath, and those would be like in bold and gray, slightly gray fonts. And when it came over fast boot, that was just completely unstyled. Then the Ember app would rehydrate and all of a sudden the styling would pop up.
So the first render that you saw from the browser was like just...
It was just like the
Was there no CSS at all in the whole app?
There was CSS in the app. So like other elements were styled. It was just like the titles. It was just the titles and descriptions and these cards weren't styled.
I see.
On the initial render. And so...
I've noticed this. Maybe we'll just bracket this. But I've noticed this if I like command tab Ember Map and I'm in another tab. So it's like the inactive tab and it loads the site. If I go to it, it'll be like, it'll look weird. It'll be like unstyled and then it'll turn on. But if you just go to it, you won't see that. I'm not sure if that's related. We can talk about that later.
That could be related to fast boot. I don't think that's not this bug though, but that's probably
still related to fast boot.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the way we render CSS and fast boot is different. So I would like to see that reproduced.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this bug, there's like, I want to explain this cause this is like super, super involved what's going on here. So what the root cause of this bug was that we had a P tag with a bunch of block elements inside of it. And the styling was on the P tag. So you had P with like text gray, text bold, and then a div and some other block elements.
Tailwind classes.
So, yeah. And inside that P, there was a div.
Okay.
That div wasn't styled. there was like another, there was a span tag that wasn't styled. So like none of the styling inside the P, there was no styling on any of the elements inside the P, just the P tag was styled. And so part of like the HTML spec says that you can't have block elements inside of P tags. They basically separate tags into a bunch of different categories, and they have like content flow tags, which are like div, and div's the only one I know off the top of my head. But then they have like text tags, which are like P and B,
span.
Span. And so you can't have a block, a content flow tag inside of a text tag.
So this doesn't have to do with the display property. Like even if you put display inline on the div, it's still invalid from a spec perspective.
Yes.
Okay.
So what happens here is that
what does that mean, invalid? What's the result of that?
That's a great question. So also in the HTML spec, says it's invalid, but it also says when you encounter this situation, here's what the browser should do.
Okay.
So in the case of a p tag with a div inside of it, you would rewrite this to p tag close p tag, div tag close div tag, p tag close p tag.
Oh.
So it's basically like you treat that div, you treat that open P as like self-closing.
Oh.
And the closing P is like self-opening, and then there's a div
in
the middle.
Seems weird. And
Yeah. But this is why. So the content was inside of the div tag, but the styling was on the P tag, and that's why the div tag was unstyled, because the browser would self-close that P tag, start a new div tag. Right,
didn't happen when I was developing it.
Right, so this doesn't happen in Ember. This only happens in Fastboot.
Because?
So this is like the trippy part. This is the part that like...
Because I'm not understanding how that's possible.
So this is part of the HTML parsing spec. When Fastboot renders HTML, it's rendering a string, and then it's sending that string to the browser.
Yep.
And then that browser parses that string and renders
a page. Is it because Fastboot uses like JS DOM or something?
Nope. Nothing to do.
Okay.
Nothing to do with that. It's the way that Fastboot communicates with the browser.
Yeah.
Sends a string of HTML that the browser has to parse. And therefore the browser can correct these errors, right?
It can
come across a P tag. There's other types of errors. Like what happens if you like don't close a certain type? What happens if you don't close a div?
Yeah.
The browser is going to self-correct that.
Yep.
It's going to render the page. Yep. Now, when you're running an Ember app, you're not using strings of HTML, right?
You're calling like a append element.
Yeah, you're doing like document.create element,
inner HTML or whatever.
Well, you're not using inner HTML because inner HTML takes a string and autocorrect. But you would do like in this P div tag thing, you would say like document, like let P equals document create element P, let div equals document create element div, and then you would do p.append child div. Now that gives you that DOM structure. That gives you a data structure object that has a p tag with a div inside of it.
Oh.
And then when you insert it.
So there's nothing in the DOM that prevents that.
Yes.
Oh.
So now you have a p tag.
So we've all been writing invalid DOMs.
Yeah.
With Ember for years and haven't even known it.
So now you have a P tag with styling, and that styling does cascade down to its child.
Right.
Because actually a child.
So if anyone tried to do this in a server rendered app, they would have seen problems in development.
Yes. You would have been like why is my title unstyled? You would have inspected the element.
I feel like that's surprising. I hadn't come across that in the past.
Yeah. Well, so I was like,
wow, that's pretty crazy.
That was my thought too. And then I was like, I wonder what like other JavaScript frameworks do. So I went to Code Sandbox, I pulled up React, I did the same thing, and it's the same thing. They'll
respect it. There's no validation error. There's nothing that's going to stop you from creating something that actually violates the spec.
Right. And I think
that's weird. It's the HTML spec, not the DOM spec.
Yeah.
Because DOM is different.
So that's I guess how I reconciled this so this is part of parsing HTML and not part of like how you create a document data structure.
Seems weird. I guess it makes sense. I guess you can think of, anyways, there's reasons why DOM is more flexible than HTML parsing.
Yes, sure. And also too, like there's reasons that these JavaScript frameworks use the DOM instead of just doing inner HTML.
Oh yeah, that makes sense to me. So, like that's fine. but it seems weird that you can end up with two different results. So basically what happens is, okay, so that's why there's a flicker, and that's why you wouldn't see it if you were developing, unless you were developing against FastBit.
Unless, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. So this is where your testing stuff comes in, because the testing stuff actually checks as part of this.
Right.
That the DOM you end up with is the same from the FastBit generated version as is the Ember generated version.
Right. So the this is another interesting thing. So how do you actually test this? This mm-hmm. is what I'm working on now.
Mm.
And this is incredibly hard to validate, because if you take an HTML string and you ask the browser, hey, give me a DOM representation mm-hmm. of this HTML string, the browser is going to autocorrect
it. Oh.
So I'm using an HTML
part. Wait, but it would autocorrect it, but it would give you a different DOM structure.
Nope. It'll give you...
We just said that if you gave me a HTML string with P and a div inside of it, it'll give you siblings, let's say.
Right, but I want to take some string. It's like, let's say FastBoot generated some string of HTML, and I just want to validate if that string is valid HTML. Right, I want to take that string.
What you really care about is a DOM, though, isn't it? Why don't you check the DOM against? Is that harder? You could check the DOM against. You see what I'm saying? I see what you're saying, that you could do a string compare.
No,
but
no,
you
no,
could
no,
also
no, no, no.
just
you
check
can't,
the DOM.
You can't do a so if I gave you an HTML string.
Yep. P right? with a div inside of
P
it.
P with a div inside
thing.
Of it. How would you know if that's valid?
You don't care if it's valid. You care what the DOM ends up with.
Yeah.
So you render it.
Yep.
And then you look at the DOM.
Okay, so you have the DOM is different, but
yeah.
now you're trying, the trick here is you're trying to compare a string to
no,
a tree.
No, you want to compare the DOM. I thought you were talking about comparing the FastBoot DOM
yep.
to the Ember DOM.
No, you can't do that because there is Ember code that won't run on the client. So you can't, so your client side DOM and your FastBoot
won't
DOM
run on the server.
Yeah, exactly. They're sorry. Flip that, yes.
That will affect the DOM. That will mutate the DOM.
Yes. Yes.
You can't compare a first. You don't want to go there where you're comparing the first render on the client to the first render on the server.
Correct.
I see.
Okay. Correct. Because there is a whole bunch of Ember that won't run on the server. So they would generate.
You would want to, but that is from an outside in perspective, from the black box perspective, that actually is what you want to see, because that's going to be the true test of whether there's going to be a flash or not. How do you tell if there's a flash or not? Give me the FastBoot response. Slurp it into a browser, give me the initial render from the Ember client, and then compare the two.
No, but like in our Ember app, that's not.
I get that it's maybe like impractical to do that, but that
no,
is.
No, I would say it's, but like we would fail in our Ember app.
Why?
Because you can't render gravatars on the server. So our Ember app the initial render will have your gravatar. The FastBoot render won't have your gravatar.
Because of the current user or whatever?
So two reasons. One, yes, because of current user. But then also two, the gravatar thing does not work in FastBoot. Like it just, there's... The, it
but
uses,
don't we render a placeholder and delay?
Yes.
So the initial render would be the same?
No, because the client-side initial render has your icon.
Doesn't lazy render it, load it or whatever? Let's take the hard case and say it didn't. Say it didn't.
Let's do something that like has a browser API. So like,
no, but I think you actually want this, because otherwise you're gonna have a flicker.
Not always. You could have like did insert element.
We didn't think it's long. We're arguing again on a podcast. You know, it was only yesterday our last argument.
No, I think
when would you not want a flick? When would you not want the same thing?
Things that are like hidden, that components that you can't render. So like components have like did insert element. There's like things.
I guess the visual output.
Yeah.
You would expect it to be the same.
Yes. Again, the gravatar case is something we would
maybe
have to
there's
do.
Like a width thing. I'm trying to think of an example where there's like a did insert element and it looks at like the device width or something. And renders like a table of contents or something. Tell me the answer. So you're never, so none of this is actually about, you don't actually compare FastBoot output to Ember output. I thought
correct,
that was the whole point. You're just validating an HTML to minimize the surprises.
Yes, correct. I don't think you can compare. I would, I don't think you can compare fast boot output to render output.
But you agree with me that you would want that as an application developer. If you're a product owner, ideally, I would want to know if my user started visiting my site and there's a flash, that's a bug from my perspective.
I think I actually think the screenshot thing would be because I don't, if you're inserting invalid HTML, but it's
you don't care.
The renders are the same, I don't care.
That's why I didn't care when I was developing the thing, the podcast page. It doesn't matter. Why does that matter? I'm validating the spec. Oh, the spec gods are going to come and find me and haunt me in my sleep. The page looks perfect.
Right. Because you're saying that if you were, this is a problem because it had a visual effect, but you're saying if you're valid and you're going against the spec, but it has no visual output, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we probably break the spec all the time in all sorts of ways, subtle ways.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying. So
I think the answer here is you have the browser generate DOM from an HTML string, and then you also have to generate some tree structure from that same HTML string, and then you compare the two. I think that is the way you start with one HTML string. And
you mean if you were going to do this Ember and Fastboot comparison, or the thing you're talking about?
The
Fastboot validation.
Fastboot validation.
Okay.
Right. So you would get back errors for things that may not have visual output.
Yeah. And that's just to help you minimize the surprises.
Yes.
Because those are like a proxy for the visual defects. But if you could test that the visual defects aren't there in a easy way, it would be an even better test because it would catch also anything that would cause that. And you can make a strong argument that like there should not be a flash. You should be thinking about these things the rehydration should be like idempotent, basically.
Yes.
That's what you would want.
Yep.
Interesting.
Now, rehydration is going to look at, it's going to render the fastboot output, and the Ember app is going to generate the initial render.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to try to, combine those things, take the things from the initial render.
It combines them?
And not combines is a bad word.
It doesn't just like enter HTML the whole app or whatever, or just take over.
Right now, it clears the whole page, and just it's like as if you started from nothing. Right. But rehydration won't do that. Rehydration is like I know you have some document that I can apply the Ember stuff.
The diffs,
However, the you basically invalidate rehydration if the Ember app output structure is different from the browser structure because now it can't match things up.
So that's kind of okay. So that's.
But I guess like who cares if you're invalidating part of the rehydration if there's no visual output.
But
there.
Maybe that would be the easiest way to actually verify that you're minimize the chance of visual flashing.
Yes,
is if you can just check rehydration. Interesting.
But it's tricky. This is tricky. Like it's not obvious how to.
Yeah. So going back to the thing that your testing thing does right now. It's not about comparing Ember app rendered to Fastboot rendered, but it's just about this. You have the like assert against the page that's rendered, and as part of like visiting and having Fastboot generate responses, you validate that HTML now, right? Or you're going to. That's going to be part of the add-on.
The add-on won't do this automatically. It's going to expose a Boolean called like isValidHTML, and you can assert okay it. Again, like this is it's really hard to parse HTML, and if you ask a browser to parse HTML, it's going to autocorrect it. So you need to
wait. So how do you do that? How does that Boolean work?
You have to parse the HTML yourself.
What does that mean?
Like I have a JavaScript implementation of an HTML parser.
Oh, and it will tell you if you did PD then div inside of a P. It'll let you know.
No, it'll just create a tree structure. Okay. And then the browser has its own API for parsing HTML.
Yeah.
And that's going to give you a tree structure. And then you compare those two tree structures.
Oh, and if the browser is doing corrections,
yours, yes, exactly. The browser is doing corrections. So the tree structure.
There's nothing that's an easy way to like the same way you validate JSON. And it just tells you there's a wrong character on column two. There's nothing that
yes.
you can just give a string of HTML to, and it'll say no, div is inside of the P. Really?
It would be awesome if
that's surprising to me.
It would be awesome if there are HTML validators out there, but again, those are JavaScript implementations of HTML validators. So we'd have to use something like that.
Yeah, but you could make that part of like the visit helper.
Yeah, I don't know. You get a lot of noise from that, right? you get like noise about attributes and stuff.
Oh,
like
stuff
that.
That's not technically valid, but you actually don't care about.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
And again, it's still back to this like.
You're saying a higher level thing is like, look at the rendered thing. If the parsed render, if the tree you have from the string matches the tree that the browser ends up with after doing corrections, then you know you're pretty much good.
Right.
And that's interesting.
Again, the weird thing here is like even if I'm not writing it, I still have JavaScript code that's parsing HTML. Right. That's just weird. That's like weird. The browser has an HTML parser built into it. It's just
you're
weird.
You're using a different thing than what the user sees to parse the HTML.
Yeah, you're using something that's like.
I agree. You've convinced me. Yeah, it'd be better to have the browser parse it and then check because that's going to be what's actually running your app.
Yeah, have the browser parse it. Like maybe there's a flag, like don't autocorrect or the thing.
That would be nice if the browser could just give you like if it had an API for, hey, we fixed these four things.
Yes.
That would be ideal,
I guess.
Yes,
yes. That would be, change this thing to a four-line function.
Yeah.
The browser can parse XML, and XML doesn't have the auto-correction rules built into it, right? Those are specific to the HTML spec.
It's more strict, XML parsing. It won't.
The HTML parsing is more strict, I guess.
Where I was thinking XML is more strict because it doesn't tolerate...
These all
syntax errors, like it doesn't tolerate things, whereas HTML will tolerate things.
So. Well, that yes. So in a way, yes, because I started down this road and I started passing the document into the XML parser. And
for
simple documents that were just like P with a div inside of it, I would get back an XML tree with a P with a div inside of it. But with an HTML document, I wouldn't get that.
Oh.
And there, I could compare those things and know they're off.
I see.
But then I started, like I would make the situation more and more complex. And I came across that XML documents, any attribute has to have a value.
Okay. So you checked.
So we have a lot of like data X. And so like those are invalid. And
or
now,
checked. I mean, that's a way to do it.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
I see.
So
and I see. You really want the browser to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like.
That's
the thing rendering your app.
What's good at taking strings and creating tree structures?
Right, right.
Browsers.
Right.
So, this is just like, it's weird. It's weird. This is like the fast boot stuff.
The snapshot stuff would be really cool here because.
What do you mean by snapshot?
The snapshot of the fast boot rendered page and the Ember rendered initial page because that would be the way to catch the stuff that you care about.
But ours, yeah, I don't know.
That's how it manifested, right? Tom showed us at the footer. He hit refresh, and he saw the thing jumping.
Right, but it would catch other things. Like our fast boot initial render doesn't match our
Ember. I think it does.
It doesn't.
I think it does.
Visually it does, but...
Yeah, exactly.
But
that's what I'm saying, a visual screenshot.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was saying. Yes. The visual screenshot diff.
Yes.
I think would be really cool.
Yes.
Maybe with Percy and with your fast boot testing thing, you could actually do that.
Yeah, you could.
You could like fast boot visit
screen
and then like Ember visit screen. I mean, that would be
compare. Yeah,
I mean that would be that's a very representative of a user actual using the app, which is pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, I mean that's ultimately what we want, and there are things that won't work in fast boot like Gravatar, but we could like highlight those areas of the page. And say we don't care if these are different.
Right.
Like the initial output doesn't need to match in this section of the screen.
Right.
But for like the content areas, it does.
Yeah. And again, I think even in this particular case, I think we lazy load that thing in. So we render initially with a skeleton screen.
No.
That's all fast boot.
Fast boot renders.
We render the header with a circle that's gray.
That's fast boot. And then so the thing in the client side app, we fetch data that only fetches when it runs on the client.
But it blocks render, but it probably shouldn't. It shouldn't.
Yes, right, yes.
You should render the same thing.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I mean,
but we
now. Of course. Yeah. But like, yeah, there would be a bunch of architectural changes that we'd have to change when, yeah, I think there's a simpler way.
Because we assume you always have a current user. Yeah.
Also just like on an Ember app, you could have like loading templates. So take like our homepage, for example.
Right.
Like we would have a loading template. We don't do this today, but we have in the past where we have a loading template, but then in fastboot we don't render that loading template. Right. In fastboot we don't want to render a loading template. We want fastboot to wait till it generates the actual HTML and then ship that to the
client. Oh, that's a good example. That if I...
Now you could say...
Interesting, because we have all the data cached. So it's different if you navigate to it from Ember.
Even removing the cache. Even removing the cache. We would say...
No, because if you didn't have the cache, then the fast boot architecture you'd want would be to send for the app shell, like with the loading screen, like with the skeleton. That's the first render you'd want.
But no. Let's say that fast boot was like...
Oh, fetching the data. Super fast.
It was like super fast. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
We wouldn't send the loading template down to the client. We'd say like, just wait fast boot to actually render the page and then send it down.
Okay. So, interesting. Wait. But in that case, the first render on the client, it has the data in the shoebox, so it still would match. The Ember app's not going to start rendering the loading template after it on the initial render because it has the data in the shoebox.
Oh, okay. So you would have to do that.
You do want it to
match. You would have to do that.
I mean, think about it. You just never want to. You never want the thing to flicker. That's at the end of the day.
So it's not. Okay. So that's a good point. It's not.
We'll get there together, everyone.
It's not rendering the Ember app. It's rendering the Ember app from
a given state. Yeah.
From a fast boot app.
Yeah. Yes.
Because the shoebox only exists when you have the fast boot app.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is.
It's the initial render of the app in that state.
It's initial render of the app given
the state that fast boot gave it or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Really. Unfortunately,
I'm convinced.
Unfortunately, we can't do this. But really,
that's our keeping a scoreboard up here, you know.
No, but we can't. Mm-hmm. We can't do this. But it is. I would love for an API that was visit in fastboot, take a screenshot, let enable JavaScript.
Yeah, that's really what you want. Instead, you don't want all the. Yeah, you don't have to redo anything. You just want it. You just want to enable, turn on the JavaScript, and let the Ember app do its actual thing. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I have no idea how we get there. Be like some puppeteer.
You could hire like illegal labor to just sit there at your CI machine and have them enable JavaScript.
Yeah.
It's like really, it'd have to be really cheap though. But then you'd have like ethics laws violations. So there's
fast
like a trade-off
food, fast
there.
Fast food is unethical. There we go.
We had another fast boot issue. Have we diagnosed that yet?
Yes. It's unfixed, but yes.
We don't have to talk about the issue, but what I wanted to ask you about that, because we just haven't debriefed on that yet, is we need to get a test. We won't have to get like a smoke test so that when when Sam goes off and does his shenanigans, that he doesn't break fast boot again. Is there a way, I know Mirage doesn't work in fastboot right now, but can't we just take one video mock out something in Express? Is that how we would do it and write a test that the OG tag is there for a video?
Yeah, I think that there's, yes.
And that would just be some handwritten mock in the HTTP server in Ember CLI.
And I think there's an Ember add-on that basically does something like this where you can have adjacent, it's like a fixture.
Mm.
And if you turn it on.
Fastboot. Fixture.
No. Oh, it's just a regular fixture. Okay. It's just a regular
over
the actual network. So it's Mirage can like intercept things and then respond.
Pass through, yeah.
There's some Ember add-on that does the same thing.
Gotcha.
It's like IC Ajax or one of those. It just will take a JSON file and respond when you hit a URL in your Ember app.
Okay, gotcha. So we could just throw a fixture file for like users current and for like the first video, like video
not even users current
because that was 404, right?
It's fast boot.
But isn't that why we can't write a test against a fast boot page that requests the user? Oh, fast boot.
Yeah.
So the first network request for a video page is just the video.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
The to sum this up, Mirage handles our HTTP requests. Mirage doesn't run in fast boot.
So therefore, we don't have tests for data-driven pages right now.
In fastboot.
Yeah. And because of that, I did an upgrade and some of the fastboot broke.
That wouldn't have caught the bug from yesterday.
It wouldn't have?
Yeah, correct.
So do you want to talk about what it is?
Yeah, I can talk about that.
How is that possible?
Let's go 50 layers deep and get all these abstractions confused.
Yeah. We could save this for next week if you wanted to. What was that
time?
We got time? Okay, let's do it.
So when Fastboot is going to get a HTTP request and then use bits of that HTTP request to like simulate its environment. So for example, imagine a non-Fastboot app. You go to like embermap.com/about, and then on that page there's like $.ajax/about.json. Mm-hmm. The browser is gonna go make an Ajax request to https://embermap.com/about.json mm-hmm. and fetch that info. It figures out, you didn't like specify the host name or the protocol, you just said $.ajax/about.json, but the browser was able to look at the URL and put together like
host protocol, fully qualified domain name.
Yes, and make that request.
Yeah.
Now, Fastboot basically does the same thing, but...
So it has to reproduce that behavior from the browser because it's running on a server.
Right. And the way it reproduces that, it looks at the HTTP request headers and says like, oh, I see the host is embermap.com. So I know the host name is embermap.com. Oh, I see the request was port 80. So I know it's HTTP. Or I see the protocol was HTTPS. So I'm going to reconstruct that. Now, Fastboot is running on our app server, and this is like, I would say this is a super common pattern. This is how Heroku works, where we have SSL, but we don't manage that SSL. So the way the contract works is the browser makes an HTTPS request. Heroku has some mesh layer in between. There's load balancers. There's SSL terminators. They validate that SSL certificate. They manage all that stuff, and they basically remove SSL from that request and pass an HTTP request to our app server at the end of the line.
Okay. I'm following a high level. This is why I married you, by the way, because I don't understand anything what you just said. So
Fastboot gets a request to boot an Ember app, and that's an HTTP request.
Yeah.
So now you have things like $.ajax/videos.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to go fetch all the videos.
Yep.
When Ember creates that URL, mm-hmm. since it's an HTTP request, mm-hmm. it's going to be http://embermap.com/videos.json. Our API server does not allow HTTP request. When it gets an HTTP request, it just says, hey, I see you want videos.json. Go fetch it from this URL, and it's going to just basically change that HTTP URL into an HTTPS URL. So you would be told, go to https://embermap.com/videos. Mm-hmm. So this is what happens in Fastboot. It makes an AJAX request to http://embermap.com/videos. The API server says, I'm not going to respond to that. Please go request the HTTPS URL.
Fastboot treats that as the response.
It gives it a redirect. So the API server gives it a redirect, and the browser, I'm like just jumping all over the place here, but this will come together, I promise. In the browser, if you make an XML HTTP request, an AJAX request, and the server redirects you, that's like completely transparent. You have no idea the server redirected you. The browser's
gonna wait and follow and respect
it's
that.
It's just gonna keep following those redirects until it gets a response.
Okay.
The AJAX client that runs in Fastboot on the server does not transparently follow redirects. So the server, our API server, says you've requested an HTTP URL. Please go get it from HTTPS. Uh-huh. In Ember data says, oh, okay, let me start reading this into the store.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like a string of HTTP.
It's expecting like a 200.
Yeah.
And it's getting back a 301 or 302.
Yeah.
And so now that throws an exception in Ember data, because Ember data is like, what the hell are you giving me?
Yeah.
I can't load this into my store.
Yeah.
It throws an exception. Fastboot can't render any HTML because an exception was thrown. And
we bail and ship the client.
Yeah, exactly. We bail and ship the client. So this is like, actually, it's pretty cool that we can survive this.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we, you know, only had so much faith in your FastBit work, so we figured we would have this bailout method. No, it makes a lot of sense. This is like super unknown territory, and it's not a well-trodden path.
You know, the thing here, too, is like, you can't point a finger at anyone here.
Yeah.
Right? Because like, think about it, from the perspective of the FastBoot app, it's like, listen, I was given an HTTP request, so I'm going to make an HTTP, like Ember Data is going to run those HTTP URLs when it fetches data.
Right.
So if you were telling FastBoot, like, hey, this is an HTTP request, not an HTTPS request, because we did SSL termination upstream mm-hmm. before it got to FastBoot. So technically Ember Data is doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like the equivalent of if you went to httpembermap.com/about.json, you expect that to be an HTTP. You expect all that Ember app to be making HTTP requests, not HTTPS requests.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really point a finger at FastBoot here. Also, you can't really say like, well, you should code your FastBoot app to like always make HTTPS requests.
Yeah.
I think that's the missing thing to do.
But there's a server here that's not respecting 302s. So ultimately that's the root issue.
AJAX and FastBoot not respecting 302s, yes.
Or some code because in our server that uses FastBoot. You know what I'm saying? If you look at the whole server, all the node code that's running the FastBoot server, just that node app from top to bottom, some part of that must respect, whether it's responsibility FastBoot or of the AJAX code that we write, or if we were to use a different network layer, like if we were to use a different request library. You know what I'm saying? If you were to just write a node server in Express, it needs to. So this, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Two questions, but the first one is.
I actually think I have my answer.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Rails apps make network requests. They make database requests, but they also sometimes will make a network request to a service.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you do that in a Rails app? And would that thing respect a redirect?
So I would say probably not.
If it was hitting some Stripe API.
Yeah. So you would just code that thing to request https api.stripe.com. That would be built into the Stripe Ruby gem.
And what if Stripe, that URL that you had hard coded or whatever, what if they change it and then they redirect you to the new one? And they do that by changing the old URL to a 302 redirect. Yeah.
So this would come down to what is the HTTP library that they're using to actually make those requests, and does it follow 302s?
Like the one you're in your Rails server as an application developer.
No. You're using the Stripe gem.
Okay, but let's just say yes, sure. But let's just say there's no gem and you're just writing a Rails.
Yes. Yeah. So that comes down to the HTTP client that you're using.
Yeah.
And this is going to come back to, I think the bug here is that like, if I can make AJAX requests on the client and it'll follow 302s.
Yeah. Your server needs to do that as well.
The server should behave basically as close to the client as possible.
Yeah.
And so, that might be where the bug lies. I mean, again, like it's one of those things where I think it's hard to convince anyone that like, oh, the fix should be here.
Right.
And we have escape hatches in Ember Data to override. So we can say, if it's FastBoot, never ever let it make an HTTP request.
And always do HTTPS.
Always do HTTPS.
But that seems like just one of many possible ways that this could go wrong. And instead, you really, this is part of the hidden cost of FastBoot. And like the reality is that you're writing a new server and that server is making network requests and needs to behave, like be a well-behaved server in the same way that, and respect these parts of the HTTP spec that like other things usually take care of for you.
Yeah.
Just like if you start hitting a Stripe API client, like a Stripe API, you need to be aware of the fact that they could start issuing redirects or something, and you need to consider that.
Right. Right.
So it's just a burden. It's just part of it. But you just need to do that.
Yeah. So. I think one of the things that makes this so hard is when we hit these bugs, it's super super hard to like actually figure out what's going out wrong. So
the next question is like, why did this just start happening?
So we upgraded Ember Data.
Yeah.
And so previously, I don't know what version this landed in Ember Data. It's on my list to figure out today and write something about it. But let's just say it was like 3.4. Mm-hmm. Previous to 3.4, so Ember Fastboot, Ember CLI Fastboot, or Ember Fastboot will, when it's running, when it will inject an initializer into your Ember app that says, when I'm running in Fastboot, I'm going to put a function into the container for how you make AJAX requests.
Oh, yeah.
So it just puts a function into the container, and you can look up, if you're running Fastboot, you can do like container lookup. It's called like AJAX colon node. Mm-hmm. And that wraps this thing called NAJAX.
So the Fastboot has one interface when I need to make a request, because that happens, let's say, if Ember Data is doing something.
Yep.
And it implements the interface or whatever, right, the same thing. But then you can swap out what you're actually using for that.
Right. So we had put a function into the container with the same name that basically enforced HTTPS. So we wouldn't get this weird redirect thing. I got this idea from someone, I forget who. But I thought it was an elegant solution. Mm-hmm. If you ever need to make an AJAX request in Fastboot, you pull this thing out of the container, and that will let you make AJAX requests. And this is exactly what Ember Data was doing. This is like really hard to like piece all this stuff together. And I think the Ember Data team was like, look, like we have Ember Data code that's like entangled and coupled to Fastboot. And now we're relying on like this thing being in the container to make network requests. And they didn't like that. And I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, these two things are entangled. It's also too, it's like not everyone runs Fastboot, and you have all this like, where is this thing coming from? Why is it here? Oh, it's put in by Fastboot. And so Ember Data took all of this code and basically they added to the adapter a way to make network requests in Fastboot.
Mm.
And those are all just private methods in the Ember Data adapter. So it no longer relies on this thing that Fastboot's putting in the container. Since we were overriding the thing that Fastboot was putting in the container and Ember Data is no longer using it, that's when this that's what brought this bug back. So there was
that was technically a breaking change. So
I don't know. You could argue that you know, just good faith argument. You could say that the thing that Fastboot was putting into the container was like private API. And it was like putting it there for things like Ember Data.
Not to be overwritten by consumers.
Yeah. Or they could say like, look, we're putting it in there for Ember Data, but you know, it's like a gray area whether or not Ember Data is going to use this.
Right. Right.
It was using it in earlier versions, but it's not now.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. I will say like the thing that makes this so hard is debugging this.
So that was the thing yesterday. We were like running Fastboot on our computer with the new versions of everything and the latest code, and it was all working.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why you said that the test wouldn't have caught this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the test doesn't cover
the test behavior. Isn't making HTTPS requests.
So you'd really need a higher level test that's really testing the server.
It's like
Heroku maybe sometimes some of this stuff, right?
It's like you need a test that's like, listen, when I get an HTTP request and then I have to make an outgoing Ember Data network request, that outgoing request better be HTTPS regardless of what the incoming request was.
Yeah.
And it's just, this is like, again, yeah, you can imagine a way to set this up, but that's like, there's a just...
No, I mean, the easier thing there would just be to have a separate staging environment with all the pieces working. Heroku, your Rails app, or the node server, the way that all works.
Pure black box.
Yeah, pure black box. Because
and then you, yeah, you curl
just do
that
one
thing.
Video. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Something like that. It'd be nice to have that.
Yeah, and like, dude, like the error messages here, they're not, again, it's like not, you get this error message.
Well, what do we do? We started telling the logs in Heroku and we saw 302 that it couldn't parse. So
it's like, can't parse 302. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, it's just really hard to figure that out. Like that's, and I think that error messaging has improved. I think before when we hit this, it was just something like could not parse data into store. And so you couldn't, like, it's just like what?
Right.
What? you know, it's just, and there's so many, yeah, there's just a lot of pieces.
Here. You don't have a network tab, a network tab in your inspector where you can look at all the requests yes. coming in and out.
It's so like yeah. client side code is easy to debug because of all the like, yeah. all the amazing tooling. But then when yeah. you put that thing on a server,
yeah, at least for us, we're used to
yes,
or yeah. we do that.
So I tried running NDB, which is like Google's Chrome debugger, which is it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's for some reason it's so slow.
And it's either fast or it's slow.
Yeah, I think, and there's a way to like configure it. I think where you like you opt out of certain codes.
So awesome when it's fast though. It is so awesome.
I started it up, and it was like taking forever.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go walk the dog.
Yeah,
and, like I walked the dog for 20 minutes. I came back, and it was still it had progressed, but it still wasn't fully booted.
Jeez.
And then like when you make a change. So you change something, it reload. You have to reload the whole app, and you go through the whole song and dance again. So I was like, "Yeah, it's just again, it's not like NDB is awesome. The right. stuff is great. It's just there's just all these little. It's like death by a thousand cuts. It's all right. these little things that just make, make this hard. I mean, I'm really happy with where we've ended up.
Yeah,
but in the back of my head, I'm like, what? Like, is there anything that could make this easier? Or is there any like? Yeah, just wondering, like...
It's also, like, if there were more people working on this and we were using more conventional code, community code,
yes.
it would be a different story.
Yeah.
I mean, think about all the little paper cuts that Rails has dealt with over the years you'd never even have to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. I think, like, the fast boot community definitely has, like, a hacker mentality.
Right.
A lot of times when we talk about this stuff, it's, oh, just add this here, throw this middleware
yeah,
in here.
Yeah, as opposed to an Ember where it's like, oh, I need to change some configuration. Where should I store that? Put that. There's like one answer for yes. all this stuff in Ember.
Yep.
Interesting. Interesting. So do you know how to fix this?
Yeah, I think so. Like after
the thing you said was a short-term fix.
I think like the Ember data adapter has a host property and it takes it. It's like a string,
but you can also say if in fastboot.
Well, it can also be a computed property.
Okay.
Exactly. So if in fastboot, basically figure out what it would be and then ensure that it's HTTPS.
Cool.
And then, yeah, it's like a quick fix, but then also too, it's like, well, if you ever call $.ajax in any other Ember code in fastboot, we also need a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause before we're no longer going to rely on this thing from the container.
Right.
That's
right.
Clearly like Ember, people that work on Ember are moving add-ons away from that.
Right.
So it's probably not. And we'll leave it in there, but it's probably not good to rely on it.
Right. I see. Interesting. I'm excited about having Fastboot back because, I was missing those sweet OG tags. Yesterday there was like a big, it was a bigger sharing day, I guess. We had like a podcast we posted. We had a video we posted, someone else shared an old podcast and he actually messaged me and he was like, hey, just want to let you know, like,
hello.
No beautiful card showed, like, it's looks like it's busted. I know you guys talk about Fastboot.
Hey,
I was like, thanks, man.
Maybe we should break the site more often. That's a great way to know that people are sharing our content.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a big lesson here, though. It's that don't rely on fastboot at runtime.
Yeah. And that's why we set this up, because there's too many unknowns.
Yeah.
We couldn't have possibly predicted this.
And that this would be like, imagine if the whole site was down yesterday because this wasn't running. Like, that would be super hard to debug. The fix would probably, I would probably take less time to like get into and understand this. And
right. Also, it's just, it's you develop. When I built that page, when I'm building new stuff, you develop and test in a certain environment, which is a client environment. And so you want that to be at least a fallback because you have more confidence in that since that's the environment you're doing it in. If you're building a fastboot app, you would just, from the ground up, that never rendered in the client, you would just go about it completely differently. Or, you know what I'm saying? You would just debug it and build it very differently. Your test would be different. So,
yeah.
Cool. Does that wrap it for today?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Cool. Let's do this again next week. You know, I think you're all right. I like you enough to come back.
Same time, same place.
Same time. If you like the show and want to help others find it, best way is to
go to iTunes, give it 5 stars.
Only 5 stars.
Wait,
that is a 6-star.
Did they? Okay, give it 6 stars. What if they went to like a 10 star? 10-star system. And I was like, give it 5 stars.
That'd be pretty bad. But yeah, we got to milk that sweet Apple brand, you know, just milk it.
When you rate us on iTunes, it does help spread the word. So we would really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And yeah, look out for a free video soon on upgrading your Ember apps and add-ons. It's a sweet thing. I want to also try to carve out some time to help update the guides on the website, because there's an upgrading section. I think it just needs a few bullet points, but this saved me so much headache and so much trouble. So
cool.
Yeah. All right. That's it for today. And we'll see you next week.
See ya.